joining us right now at PMP Network is Paul Cowsill. And, of course, the name sounds familiar because he's one of the Cowsills. There's like 100 Cowsills, aren't there? There's a lot of Cowsills out there.
I'll tell you what, with all the grandkids that are popping out of all the Cowsills, there are a ton.
There are a lot of Cowsills.
A lot of cousins.
I know I spoke to Bob, I think it was last year.
Yeah, he was
nice guy.
And
looking forward to talking to you as well. Now, you joined the Cowsills later. You weren't one of the first, right?
I was not one of the first. I was actually more into the sports angle of life. I was playing baseball and football and just doing the normal hop, not even thinking about joining anything, because it was just kind of, music was a part of our lives, even mine. Although I wasn't in the band, we were doing all that folk stuff during the Hootenanny days and stuff, and music was just something that was happening in our house.
Right, but so Bill and Barry and Bob and everybody else, they were all doing their music around the house, but you were playing sports.
I was playing sports, yeah.
Did you ever feel like you were missing anything, and did they ever feel like they were missing anything?
You know, I never really felt at the time that anybody was missing anything, you know, but then there were a ton of us, and it just seemed like everybody was kind of doing what they were wanting to do. And Bill, being the first guy to pick up the guitar and stuff, and then Bob soon after him, because Bill wanted somebody to play with, that was just what they decided to do. Although Bob was a big sports guy, music was really what they were after. I mean, they attacked it as you might think a John Lennon and a Paul McCartney would attack it. They really wanted to be a part of it, and Barry as well. And so it was the three of them at the beginning. And then, you know, everybody wanted a four-man band because the Beatles happened, right?
Right.
And so then they recruited John, because me and my brother Rich, we just had other things in our minds. Susan was still too young, and Mom didn't even have a thought in her head about ever doing that until, you know, obviously that she was recruited.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting to know. A lot of people think that the Cowsills were an instant hit. You know, the Raynham Park and other things, rain here, boom, boom, boom. That's not true. You guys played around Newport, and actually they had a single out that was independently put out, and Mercury signed the group.
That's right.
And their first debut album, called Most of All, which is probably a collectible at this point, didn't do much in terms of sales.
Yeah.
It was a hometown hit. It was big around Newport, but
it was. You know what? I do think that it was on the Bubbling Under part of the Cashbox or Billboard chart.
Yeah.
And that's as far as that got. You know, this Millennium Collection that Universal has put out, actually is a bit of the reason that this action is happening with, interviews and stuff. What they did was they took all the songs that ever made it to the charts by us, whether it was a Bubbling Under or, you know, whatever those pre-lists are. And so it was interesting to see stuff like, I don't think Love American Style has ever been on an album compilation.
No, a lot of people don't realize it was the Cowsills who sang that theme song.
I know. You know, it's funny because I've been getting a lot of calls, you know, about, hey, you guys did Love American Style? And I go, yeah, before Bernie and his musical crew came on. But for the first 10 years, I believe, of Love American Style, we were the band singing it.
I'm looking forward to getting that CD. It's called 20th Century Masters, the Millennium Collection, and it's from Universal Music and the Polydor.
It was wild, Mark, because I'll tell you why it was wild. It's because, you know, just when you think, well, you know what, just when you think as a Cowsill, just when you think that, oh, the Cowsill thing, you know, just about ran its course, you know, all of a sudden, boom, here's a brand new album. I mean, you know, I guess Universal must have obtained the collection, you know, the catalog, and they've done a really nice thing. So you don't have a CD.
I don't have that one, no.
Oh,
no.
Gosh.
But I do have the Best of the Cowsills, the earlier edition from Great Music. So.
Right. Well, this is that plus more.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, especially getting the copy of Love American Style, which is kind of rare to get on CD.
Yeah, it's really cool sounding, too, I'll tell you, you know, on CD.
Well, I think, you know, you brings up another point about, you know, Universal putting this thing out, and that means that I assume you guys are going to go tour and support it?
You know what? It's funny because we didn't even know about it, to tell you the truth, until just a couple of two or three weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they asked us to do the liner notes of this compilation at one point. And, you know, for one reason or another, you know, my brother Bob got that call, and he didn't really get back to him too quickly because, you know, these things happen all the time, and it's funny because nobody ever wants our involvement on it.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get it on CD, and they want to get it out, and they don't want to hear from any cow sills. And so, you know, but this time it was nice. So, yeah, we're willing. Look, it's really fun, Mark, just for the legacy part of life, you know. We're not talking fame and fortune here anymore. We're not talking about the Cowsills getting the big record deal out of Sony or you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We're really well aware of that, you know. What's nice for us is that we've finally realized here at the end of this whole thing that we do music for the love of the music. I mean, we will travel thousands of miles to play music, you know, without really a payday at the end of it, except for the thrill of having done it. We've had two albums out since our heyday and stuff, or actually three. One is being sold over our website, which is cowsill.com, and there's a couple of others that just got shelved by Columbia. Everybody was real nervous about the Cowsills, you know,
mm-hmm.
and taking on the Cowsill thing, and yeah, they all just kind of blew it in our opinion, because we've got tapes of awesome music that we're going to, you know, eventually put out over our website just for the fans and the people that really did love the music. And
there are many people that, including myself, who when you first hear the first notes, I saw her sitting in the rain,
oh, yeah.
You know, it gives you a special feeling.
Yeah.
It's not going to change.
It's never going to change, no. No, for those people that have that, you know, that song might come on and boom, and they might be brought right back to the summer, knowing who they were with and what they were doing, and that's what music is to all of us. That happens to me daily.
Yeah.
You know, well, I got a great tune, and that's it.
Now, when the new one came out, when the Universal one, which yeah. I don't have, came out.
How did they get you that?
I think that they're going to send me one. They said
okay.
They did already, but we haven't received it. But that's,
okay.
You know, happens sometimes. Hopefully we'll get it. But if we don't, we'll send you an email.
Yeah, we'll get it off to you.
But, you know, the interesting thing about this thing is that sometimes when they do those kind of things, they let you put a new song in. Did they talk to you at all about maybe putting one new song in the collection?
They did not talk to us about any of that. And you know what? Mine and Bob's idea is that's why we're kind of going with all of this. We're willing to talk to, you know, everybody. And, you know, you guys out there that, you know, want interviews with us and play this stuff and are excited about it, I mean, we love that. We really do love that. You know, we feel bad that you guys don't get new stuff from us because we record it all the time. And it's just wonderful music. I mean, it's some of the best music we've ever done in the last 10 years.
Well, people don't realize that most of the music that was done by you folks, or at least a lot of it, was written by the Cowsills.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
That writing is still there. I mean, Tony Romeo did write some of the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote for everybody.
Him and Wes Farrell and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a lot of it was written by you folks. And,
yeah, you know, and what we're hoping on, you know, and our attitude with Universal, you know, we called them, you know, a couple of weeks ago and said, look, you know, and we were just spoofing with them, but we said, hey, this is great. We finally have a record label. We have an album out, and we'd like you to hear our new stuff. So we're kind of working that angle right now, and, you know, not with any hopes of just maybe somebody would just distribute this thing for us. It's all recorded and mastered and all printed up, you know.
Well, you know, Meatloaf had that huge Bat Out of Hell, and everybody said, oh, well, he's done, you know,
yeah.
Put a fork in him. He comes back years and years and years later with Bat Out of Hell 2, and it was almost as big as the first one.
Yeah.
You never know.
I know, you don't. And so we're taking, you know, we're doing this because it's fun to do, and also, you know, Universal, they're big dudes, so you know, maybe they want to do something with us. You know, we called them up and said, hey, get us on TV. TV will always let us on.
Mm-hmm.
We could make a call today and we'll get on TV. You know, it's just you don't want to go on TV if you got nothing to say.
Well, also, do you want to go on TV and do Rain the Park and other things, or do you want to do something new?
No, yeah, we want to do new.
Yeah.
Of course.
But, of course, they're going to want you to do Rain the Park and other things.
They will, or Hair.
Yeah. Or Indian Lake, or
yeah.
Love American Style, or something.
Yeah, we used to make deals like with Good Morning American stuff. They wanted us to come on and do those things, you know, so their lighting guy could do some nice 60s lighting and stuff and maybe get an Emmy. And so we made a deal with them that you let us do some new stuff and we'll do as much old stuff as you want us to.
Well, the coincidental thing would be if you went on Today Show, because in 1966, the Cowsills debuted on the Today Show.
Exactly.
So that would be kind of cool to celebrate, you know, 35 years later. going on the Today Show.
It would. It would. In fact, you know, the whole band, my brother Bill, Barry, even my brother Rich, who's, you know, never been in the band, we all performed together last summer in Newport, Rhode Island, you know, where we grew up, at their big Taste of Rhode Island festival they have there. And it was the first time in 30 years that we had all played together. You know, we always have the Council West Coast, Council East Coast. There's bands, you know, that stick together, like Bob, John, Susan, and myself basically have been recording for the last, you know, 17 years together.
Right. You know, we should mention that, and we did mention earlier, but we didn't really talk about it much, but when your mom, Barbara, really joined the band is when it really took off.
It really did. It really did, because all of a sudden, I think that people were going, oh, wow, look at this, isn't just four guys, because it was really about four guys at the time.
Yeah.
And I think Madison Avenue, you know, had a good idea.
Well, because your mom was added, then your sister Susan,
right,
and then yourself. But, I mean, it was, I think that, you know, again, with the Partridge Family thing and the Brady Bunch and all the mixture of girls and boys,
right,
it seemed to be that was more successful at that point than all guys.
It was. And, you know, and the type of music that the Councils were doing at the time was a great brand new sound. You know, we were always branded, and I use branded because it seemed like that's after the years went by, we were branded with this bubblegum title. You know, and you know, the bubblegum thing is a funny thing because, you know, Bob Dylan coined the phrase bubblegum, and it wasn't in a derogatory way. It was a statement about the music of the different genres of music that there were there. And when Bob Dylan was asked about the Councils, and he liked the Councils, by the way, his mother and father came to our show in Duluth, Minnesota, and came up to us, and my father came up to us and said, hey, there's some people I need you to meet over here, and it's Mr. and Mrs. Zimmerman, and we were talking to them, and I was not aware that they were Bob Dylan's parents, and they were saying, oh, our son Bobby just loves you guys, and this and that. Well, come to find out, it's Bob Dylan's parents, and, you know, it was a pretty big deal, but you know, the music was just labeled bubblegum for lack of, maybe just to show the, you know, the sweet kind of happy sound that our music had in it.
But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that sweet sound because, you know,
Absolutely not. We
spoke the other day with Andy Kim and with Mark Lindsay and Gary Lewis and all those guys had great, nice, sweet music, and there's nothing wrong with it. And in fact, nowadays, when you hear some of the trash that's out, it sounds so good that that's why oldies radio is doing so well.
Right. And you know what's really funny to me, Mark, is that I heard Smash Mouth do I'm a Believer. They've released I'm a Believer. I'm sure it's a movie thing. I'm not sure about that, but I can't imagine them just like going and going, man, let's do I'm a Believer. It's a hot tune.
I like Smash Mouth.
I love Smash Mouth.
Yeah, I like, they're really good.
You know, and just to, you know, hear them doing like a song like I'm a Believer, I just go, oh, cool, you know, because they were probably young growing up with that music.
Well, you know who originally did I'm a Believer?
No, who?
Neil Diamond. He wrote it, and he did it first.
Oh, of course, yes.
The Monkees, of course, made it the number one song in 1967.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But you see, that was my first album I ever bought. Was the first Monkees album.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm going back in time. In fact, when I say album, my kids go, what? A what?
Yeah.
Mean photos?
No.
Yeah, they call my 45s the big CDs.
The big CDs, yeah. And don't touch them.
Yeah, it's amazing. We're talking with Paul Council of the Councils, and again, the 20th Century Masters, the Millennium Collection is now out of the best of the Councils. And I guess when you hear it, they all bring back memories from you for a four-year period of 66 to 1970.
Oh, yeah.
Any of the songs extra special to you, or do you like them all the same? When you perform the songs, which one do you enjoy doing the most?
Well, I mean, it's funny because there was a time in my life that I did never want to sing Rain the Park and Hair again, ever. But, you know, now in this life of the now, we do shows all the time. And you know, our encores are always those songs. People aren't really going to let us get off there until they hear one or two of these songs. They're great to do. I think that what we try to do when we do them now is really do them like we did them back then, and with all the right harmonies and stuff, and it's always a gas to do Rain the Park and Hair, you know. It's just now it has turned into a real fun thing to do, and people really get off on them, you know. It's one of those things. it's just a fun thing to do.
I always like the song We Can Fly as well.
And we do We Can Fly as well, yes. You know, we put all the horns on my keyboards, and we try to get the tracks as close as possible. We Can Fly is a great one to do, even if we were to just stand there and do it a cappella.
Yeah.
I mean, that just comes off with one acoustic guitar. It's a phenomenal tune.
Now, which of the Cow Sills co-wrote that song?
That was Bill and Bob.
Okay, because I know it was also co-written by the guys who wrote The Ring in the Park and other things.
Right, which is Artie Kornfeld and Steve Dubois.
Right, they all four of them wrote that the other one together.
Yeah, and those two guys were they did the song Pied Piper. Remember?
Sure, Lemon the Lemon.
The Lemon.
Lemon? No, that was Pied Piper. Was but the Lemon? Was that the Lemon? No, Crispy and St. Peter.
Yes,
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that was Artie Kornfeld and Steve Dubois. You know, and Artie,
wow,
he was one of the guys that did Woodstock. Artie was the guy when they were talking to him, and he's going, oh, man, it's beautiful, man. And the guy's going, yeah, but you're losing a lot of money. He goes, oh, no, man, it's all about the music. That was Artie. So they were great guys. They were.
Hey, we had, talking about Woodstock, we had Eddie Kramer on, the other guy who did all the recording for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those legends in music, you know, on the other end of the scale,
yes,
that people
yes.
never see.
Yeah.
So in terms of when you're going out right now and doing concerts,
yeah.
You know, I know people want to hear the hits, and I'm sure you're sneaking some of the new stuff in as well. Do you also do oldies from other groups, some cover stuff?
Always.
What kind of stuff do you like to cover?
We cover usually Beach Boys stuff. We'll usually do one or two Beach Boys stuff, some Beatles stuff. We touch on the Rolling Stones. Sometimes we'll do kink stuff. It just really depends on, you know, what's fun. Hey, there's a lot of times we'll throw Bang a Gong in there just because people love Bang a Gong.
Little T-Rex, huh?
Yeah. And we mix up our shows all the time.
I'm still thinking about you guys doing kinks. A little Cow Sills version of Lola.
Yeah. And, just, you know, we'll do Bus Stop,
Hollies, yeah.
Yeah, the Hollies, a lot of Hollies stuff, and just whatever. You know, whatever fancies are fancy.
Yeah. What was it like growing up? I mean, here's your family, on TV all the time, number one records. You jumped in, I guess, around Indian Lake was the time that you jumped in to sing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean, were you getting at that point, saying, hey, you know, this is around 68, and this is already a couple of years now. These guys are making money. They're doing great, and I think I want to get in this too.
Well, yeah, and what was happening to me was that all of a sudden they started doing well, and all of a sudden now we're out of town, and being a family, we didn't have any decision power in saying, well, you know, I think I got to stay. You know, I've got a big tournament this weekend in baseball. So I was kind of zapped out of the sport thing to help out with the family business of this band, and whether it was just me loading equipment or loading the buses or whatever. And then at one point, it really seemed like the baseball thing was a done deal because we started out on that U.S. tour, and we never went back to Newport, Rhode Island. And so I remember going up to my dad and going, hey, you know, I think I'm ready to be in this band.
Yeah, I'm sick of lugging the luggage here, you know.
I'm sick of lugging the luggage and telling everybody why I'm not in the band.
Yeah.
And so there was no good reason for me not to be in. So, you know, the guys, you know, they had just had to deal with a mom joining the band and a Susan joining the band.
Right.
And now here's Paul, and I was a pretty luggy 15-year-old. You know,
uh-huh.
I was big and kind of, you know, I was just like that, you know, that puppy that just couldn't walk straight and was always bouncing around and stuff. And but, you know, everybody was cool with it. And in fact, yeah, Indian Lake was my first recording session at A&R in New York. And then from then on, it was just all cool, you know, And you know, I had my talents, you know. I wasn't as, like, musically inclined as the other guys and stuff like that, but we all have this sense of show in us, and I was lucky to have that, and lucky to be able to be in the band, to tell you the truth, because as a teenager, you know, just going through all that weird stuff that every teenager goes through, I got to balance it off with, like, all these people going, hey, wow, you guys are cool, you know, and so... So I grew up pretty much in the midst of all that with a good self-confidence intact. My self-esteem was intact. My ego was well intact, and it was under control as well. It wasn't like I was some big dude. But I didn't have to face all the normal problems. I was being accepted by millions of people out there. And for a teenager, I thought, well, this is cool, so I guess I'm okay. And so I never had to doubt, like, if I was a weird guy or not. I mean, I know I was weird. But, you know what I mean?
So, I know exactly what you mean. But I'll tell you something. Going on the stage and hearing the applause and feeling the electricity of the crowd, I think more than compensates missing some of the Little League action.
Yeah, exactly. Or a junior prom or what happened.
Yeah.
No, it was my life. I mean, I can only speak for myself. And, you know, I was right in the middle and all that. But, boy, I have had just the best life. I mean, and even after the Cowsills, post-Cowsill,
yep,
life has been just really fantastic, you know. Just my kids. I had two boys that are grown now, and I'm a grandfather. And my youngest son played with the California Angels as a professional baseball player.
Wow.
And so many wonderful things have happened to me in my life. You know, and I just think that maybe I expected all those things to happen even after the Cowsill thing. I realized a long time ago that fame and fortune was not what was going to get me through.
Right.
It just isn't about that, never has been about that for me. Yeah, we had a lot of money and all that great stuff, but, you know, I lived great, and, you know, and then I got drafted, actually. I was a part of that first 19-year-old draft in 1970, and my ping pong ball came out of that machine number two, and so that kind of sealed my fate to a certain degree, you know. So, but my life has just been fantastic, and music's been a big part of it all the way down the line. In fact, we've done our best music. I mean, it is on, it has been recorded, and just people passed on it all the way down the pike.
You know? Now, are your boys musically inclined?
They are so musically inclined, and in fact, what's funny about that is that my youngest son, Brendan, the baseball player, he retired this year. And he has been playing with our band.
Huh.
I mean, that's how good he is. Because, you know, if he wasn't good, he wouldn't get past muster. I mean, he just, you know, wouldn't work out. And so he plays with us. And all, I must say, all the kids of us, of ours, Bob's kids, my kids, they all are very musically inclined. Bob's youngest daughter is, like, you know, going to be great on the guitar. And he also has a son who went to just went off to college, Lewis and Clark. And he plays baseball. He went on a baseball scholarship. And so,
so you got baseball running in the family, too, then?
We have baseball way running in the family.
Yeah.
And that's a big, fun thing for all of us. I mean, it's funny because sports to me and Bob through our whole life has really been a lot more important than some music at times, you know, because that's with our kids, and we realize that's the real important stuff. You know?
Absolutely. That's where it's all at. But, you know, in terms of parenting and kids, every time that you hear the music, your mom kind of stays with you.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of nice, too.
It is nice. It's nice at those occasions when you're thinking, gosh, she's been gone a long time, and then boom. Well, I know. I looked at, when I got this CD, you know, they did a nice thing, I'll tell you, Mark. They put a lot of great pictures in there, and they didn't just, you know, they just didn't throw something together and throw it out. They did put some thought into it, and it's a bit of the reason me and Bob are trying to help them out with it, because they were real serious about what they did.
Hmm. You know, well, they always do a good job. These 20th Century Masters are really, there's a nice collection.
Yeah, because they're really neat. And the linear notes, although some of the facts aren't quite right, like they said, Rain in the Park and other things was our biggest hit, and it really was Hair that was. But, you know, just some information glitches like that, but otherwise it's all pretty well.
Well, every time I go to see that musical Hair and hear the song, it brings back Cowsills.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you think of that all the time.
Yeah.
And the new CD is called 20th Century Masters, the Millennium Collection, the Best of the Cowsills. And again, you have cowsills.com, and
yes,
I assume that...
www.cowsills.com. It's
right.
A full-on website run by the fans and all sorts of stuff.
So I assume if you're touring, the schedule will be up there.
Whatever we're doing, whatever anybody's doing, whether it's my sister out of New Orleans with her Continental Drifters band, or Bill playing solo, or Barry playing solo, or the Cowsills, you know, the global band, the Cowsills playing, it's all there. And my brother John's out with the Beach Boys right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys, you left MGM in 1970. A lot of the stuff that you guys accomplished was with MGM. Do you ever think about, is MGM even still around, or was it bought by somebody?
Yeah, MGM has been dissolved into the conglomerate of record business.
I remember Herman's Hermits on that label as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, gosh, and And I think, I guess, was Sam DeSham on?
Yeah, Sam DeSham was on that too, yeah.
Yeah, and Tommy James.
Yeah. No, Tommy James was on Roulette.
Roulette, that's right.
Yeah.
See, we all had the same personal manager, a guy named Lenny Stogel.
Oh.
And Sam was with Lenny, and Tommy James was with Lenny.
Tommy's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
I don't know Sam. I've never talked to him, but Tommy's been on the show 3 or 4 times, and we actually went on a cruise together over the harbor in Boston once.
Oh, cool.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, Sam owns actually, what Sam DeSham does is he owns a work boat, which are the boats that facilitate all the rigs out in the Gulf.
Really?
Yeah, all the platforms, and, you know, he just runs food out or whatever.
Huh.
And, one time I was, because I worked offshore for the Global Marine Drilling Company for a while in my life, and I was shipping out of Galveston and got on the work boat and went up, and there was Sam driving this thing. And I went up to him, and I went, Sam! He goes, hey, Paul, let's not, you know, he was being really kind of weird about the old days and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And didn't want to talk about it. And, hey, I'm just running this work boat, and this is just what I want to do, and I don't want anybody to know who I am.
Wow.
Went, oh, okay. Well, your secret's safe with me, dude.
You should just sing, Wooly Bully.
Yeah.
You know? No reason I'm just singing here. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a wonderful talking to you, Paul. And,
all right, Mark.
I hope that the CD does well. And
yeah.
if you're going to be touring, do you ever come back to Rhode Island or the area around here?
Well, you know what? We've already been asked to do that, Taste of Rhode Island again.
Yeah.
Which would be next September.
Well, we must see you when you're there. So,
man, let's do it.
Make sure you tell us what's going on so we'll know.
I'll give you a heads up.
All right, and we'll also be checking cowsills.com.
Oh, dude.
And the best of the Cowsills, the 20th Century Masters, the Millennium Collection from Polydor, and the Universal Music. Thanks so much for coming on. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.